So, when we usually pick up a scientific paper for one of these deep dives, we're kind of getting ready to celebrate a discovery.
Yeah, that's the standard narrative, right? Discovery is exciting.
Exactly. Someone found a new element, a new way to build a bridge, something like that. It's usually about adding something to the pile of human knowledge.
But today's source material is a little different.
It feels less like a construction project
Oh,
and, I don't know, more like a controlled demolition.
that is a very, very accurate way to put it. We're looking at a paper from 1983 by HKDH Padeshia from the University of Cambridge.
Okay.
And you're right, he isn't presenting some shiny new alloy. He is taking a sledgehammer to a really popular theory that had kind of taken hold in the metallurgy world.
The theory of special solute drag. I mean, even the name sounds a little suspicious, doesn't it?
It does, a bit like special sauce.
Right.
It implies a certain vagueness, and that's exactly what Padeshia was targeting. For years, scientists saw steel behaving weirdly, transforming much slower than their math said it should. And they basically invented this concept to explain the gap.
So the mission for this deep dive is to watch how he dismantles that invention. It's like a scientific showdown.
It is.
You've got the crime, the
Yes.
slow-growing steel, the suspect's special salute drag, and then the detective Padeshia, armed with just logic and, surprisingly, Albert Einstein.
It's a masterclass in using fundamental thermodynamics to say, hey, stop inventing magic forces just because your equations don't work.
And the stakes here are actually pretty high, right? We're talking about the fundamental changes that determine how strong our steel is.
Absolutely. If our models for this are based on a fantasy, then we can't reliably design things like, safety critical infrastructure.
That's a great point. So let's unpack this. Before we get to the special version that Padeshia basically hated,
Right.
we have to establish what salute drag actually is, because it's not all fake, is it?
Oh no, not at all. Conventional salute drag is a well-documented physical reality. It's standard textbook science, especially in a process called recrystallization.
Okay, let's try and visualize this for everyone listening. We're deep inside a piece of hot metal. It's not just a solid block, it's made up of tiny crystals, right?
Correct. Grains. And when you heat the metal, those grains change. The boundary between one crystal and another, just imagine a fence line, it moves through the material as one grain grows and eats the other.
Okay, so the fence is moving, but this is an alloy, so the field isn't empty. It's full of impurities, atoms like carbon, manganese, molybdenum.
Precisely. Now, physically, that boundary, that fence, it's a bit of a chaotic place. It's a defect in the otherwise perfect crystal structure. And thermodynamics tells us that certain impurity atoms find it energetically easier to just sit right there on the boundary. They segregate to it.
So the boundary gets crowded, it picks up hitchhikers.
It develops an atmosphere of these solute atoms. Now, here's the catch. If that boundary wants to move, it can't just zip past them. Because of the attraction, this interaction energy, it has to pull that whole atmosphere along with it.
I'm thinking of it like walking through a muddy field versus walking on pavement. The atoms are like the heavy mud clinging to your boots.
Yeah.
Every single step takes more energy.
That works. Or, think of a celebrity trying to walk through a party. If they're alone, they can sprint. But if they have an entourage of 20 people surrounding them who all want to stay close,
They can only move as fast as the entourage can shuffle. The
exactly.
entourage is the salute drag.
That's it. And there's a key physics point here that Padeshia really highlights. For this drag to even exist, the atoms have to move. They have to diffuse along with the boundary.
Right, the entourage has to actually walk.
But what if the celebrity starts running?
Well, they leave the entourage behind.
Precisely. If the driving force on the boundary is strong enough, it just breaks away from the solute atmosphere. The drag disappears because the atoms literally can't diffuse fast enough to keep up.
Okay, so that's the baseline. Conventional drag is real. It involves diffusion. It acts like a brake. No controversy there.
None at all.
So, where does the trouble start? Where do we get into this special stuff?
The trouble starts when we move from simple recrystallization to the real heavy lifting of steel making,
Oh,
phase transformations.
specifically when austenite turns into ferrite.
The bread and butter of the industry, it is.
Yeah.
So researchers, specifically a team led by Kinsman and Aronson, they were studying a very specific alloy, iron, mixed with molybdenum and carbon.
Famously.
Molybdenum. Sounds like a villain in a sci-fi movie. It's just a heavy atom, though, right?
A heavy substitutional atom. It just replaces iron atoms in the crystal lattice.
Mm-hmm.
But these researchers, they ran the math. They used a standard model called parity equilibrium.
That sounds fancy. What's that in plain English? It's a model that basically assumes the iron and the heavy molybdenum atoms are just too slow to separate during the transformation, but the tiny carbon atoms can move around freely.
Okay.
It essentially predicts how fast the ferrite crystal should grow if only carbon is dictating the pace.
So they have a prediction. At 750 degrees, the steel should grow this fast.
Correct. But when they ran the experiment, specifically between about 720 and 800 degrees Celsius, the ferrite, well, it didn't listen to the math. It grew sluggishly, way slower than the prediction.
The model failed. The celebrity was walking too slow.
It failed significantly, and this is where scientific philosophy kicks in. When your model fails, you really have two choices. You can say, my model is missing something fundamental, or...
Or you can say there must be a mysterious force slowing things down.
And they chose the mysterious force. They proposed special solute drag. They argued that molybdenum was doing something unique at the interface, something different from the conventional drag we just talked about.
So what was their theory? Why was molybdenum supposedly holding things back?
They argued that because the interface is disordered and has a really high concentration of carbon, the molybdenum atoms essentially get stuck there. They claimed there's some kind of special binding energy.
So molybdenum sees all the carbon at the border and just says, nope, I'm staying here. I'm holding on to this.
Essentially. They suggested these mole atoms act as pinning points, that they put a brake on the transformation, forcing the boundary to bend around them or just wait for them to diffuse short distances, a special interaction.
Hence the special tag. It almost sounds like they just slapped a label on a mystery to make it go away. Why is it slow? Oh, that's just the special drag.
Badeshia certainly thought so. And this is where the paper really turns into a detective story. He decides to interrogate the suspect. He asks a very fundamental question. Does the molybdenum actually want to be at the interface?
He checked the motivation.
He went right back to first principles. And this is where, and I love this, he brings in Albert Einstein.
Wait, Einstein? Yeah. In a metallurgy paper.
Yep. And it's totally relevant. Back in 1905, Einstein proposed that the force acting on a diffusing atom is related to the gradient of its chemical potential.
Okay, let's unpack that. Gradient of chemical potential.
In plain English, atoms aren't sentimental. They don't stick to things for fun. They just move toward where they are most comfortable, thermodynamically speaking. They chase the lowest energy state.
Right. So if the special drag theory is true, molybdenum must be incredibly comfortable at that interface. It must want to be there.
Exactly. So Padeshia runs the numbers. He calculates the partial molar free energy of molybdenum in the ferrite versus the austenite at the interface. He looks at the raw thermodynamics.
Surprisingly, no. The math says the complete opposite. Despite all that carbon, the thermodynamic preference for molybdenum is to be in the ferrite.
So it actually wants to get away from the interface.
Effectively, yes. There is no thermodynamic driving force for it to segregate to the interface and clump there, like they said. Wow. So the whole theory relies on molybdenum wanting to stick to the boundary, but thermodynamics proves it would rather be somewhere else.
Exactly. The motive for the crime just doesn't exist. Hadeshi writes that the assumption that Mo is bound to the interface creates a contradiction. If it doesn't want to be there, it can't be causing this massive drag.
That's a huge blow to the theory. But he doesn't stop there, does he? He also goes after their logic about carbon.
Oh, this is the part that's really impressive. The carbon activity paradox.
This part made my head spin a little, so walk us through it. The special drag folks had a theory about how molybdenum affects carbon, right?
Yes. They claimed that the segregated molybdenum atoms would reduce the activity of carbon in the austenite right next to the interface.
And activity is kind of like how potent the carbon is, its chemical pressure.
Exactly. Think of it as effective concentration. The growth of the ferrite is fueled by carbon diffusing away from the interface. It depends on a concentration gradient, a slope.
Okay, I can visualize that. High carbon at the interface, low carbon further away, carbon flows down the hill.
Right. And the steeper the hill, the faster the carbon flows and the faster the steel grows.
Steep hill, fast growth. Got it.
So the special drag theory argued, molybdenum lowers the carbon activity. This flattens the chemical hill. Therefore, things slow down.
That sounds logical on the surface.
It does, until you look at the requirement for equilibrium. Padeshi points out a fatal flaw. Equilibrium has to be maintained across that interface. If molybdenum lowers the activity coefficient, the potency of carbon, then to keep the chemical potential balanced, the actual amount of carbon has to change.
Change how?
It has to go up.
Yeah.
To maintain the same pressure with less potent carbon, you simply need more carbon atoms.
Okay, I see where this is going.
Yeah.
If you stack more carbon atoms at the interface,
then the concentration of carbon at the interface physically increases.
And if the pile of carbon at the interface gets higher,
the concentration gradient, the physical slope leading away from it, gets steeper.
And a steeper slope means?
Faster growth.
That's fantastic. So their explanation for why the steel was growing slow relies on a mechanism that, if you actually follow the math, would make it grow fast.
It completely contradicts itself. It just shows what happens when you look at one variable in isolation. Oh, activity goes down, without considering the whole thermodynamic system.
It's a logical pretzel. He really left them no room to wiggle.
No. And he takes one last swing at another related theory, the cluster theory.
Right, from Sharma and Purdy.
Yes. They suggested that maybe alloying elements like chromium or molybdenum form these little clusters in the austenite, like little gangs of atoms. These clusters hold on to carbon, and the interface gets stuck trying to strip them away.
Like trying to peel a sticker off a jar, and it keeps ripping because the glue is too strong.
Good visual.
Mm.
But Padeshi just checks the activity coefficients again. In low alloy steels, the interaction parameters for both molybdenum and chromium are less than unity.
Which means?
Physically, it means they don't want to cluster. They actually want to be dispersed. They repel each other slightly. So these clusters likely don't even exist to cause the drag in the first place.
Man, Einstein, paradoxes, coefficients, the defense rests, the special salute drag theory is dead.
It is effectively dismantled.
But, and this raises the biggest question for me, if it wasn't special salute drag, why was the steel growing so slowly? The experiment wasn't wrong, was it?
No, the observation was absolutely correct. The interpretation was wrong. And this is the pivot. Padeshi says we should stop looking for a magical brake pedal and look at what else is happening in that temperature range. Remember, this was an iron molybdenum carbon alloy between 720 and 800 degrees.
Right.
In that exact zone, molybdenum loves carbon. It loves it so much, it wants to form a completely different structure, molybdenum carbide. What do you see?
So actual physical particles, right. Little rocks forming inside the metal.
Exactly. Interphase precipitation. Padeshi points out that substantial amounts of these molybdenum carbides precipitate right at the austenite-ferrite interface during the transformation.
So while the ferrite is trying to grow, these little carbide rocks are forming right on the front line.
And forming those carbides is expensive, energetically speaking. It requires the molybdenum atoms to diffuse and gather up. It consumes the driving force, the energy that's available for the transformation.
So it's not that the interface is being dragged by some mystery force. It's that the energy is being diverted.
Yes. Think of it like a budget. You have a certain amount of energy to grow the crystal. If you spend half of that budget building carbide walls, you just can't grow the crystal as fast.
It's a competing reaction.
Precisely. The drag is just the natural consequence of having to move atoms around to build these carbides. You don't need a special theory. You just need to account for the precipitation that's happening.
That makes so much more sense. It's like saying, why is the car moving slow? Is the handbrake on?
Yeah.
No, you're just driving uphill while towing a boat.
Indeed. The boat being the carbides.
There was another alternative you mentioned that I found really interesting, the ledge mechanism.
Yes, this is a crucial concept. We tend to model these boundaries as these smooth, flat planes moving forward like a bulldozer. But in reality, on an atomic scale, interfaces often grow by ledges.
Like a staircase.
Exactly. Atoms don't just stick anywhere on the flat face. They attach to the edge of a step, a riser. The boundary moves sideways to go forward.
So the step slides across, and that pushes the whole face forward by one atomic layer.
Right. Now, if you calculate the speed, assuming a smooth bulldozer motion, but the reality is a limited number of steps sliding across.
Your calculation is going to be way too fast.
Exactly. The rate of adding new ledges can be much slower than the theoretical smooth movement. Padeshi notes that it might not be realistic to treat the growth in terms of a simple planar interface.
So the slowness might just be the geometry of growth itself. We were just using the wrong map.
Precisely. A geometry problem, not a friction problem.
I want to touch on one final point. The bay.
Ah, the famous bay in the PTT diagram.
For our listeners, a TTT diagram charts time, temperature, and transformation. Usually it looks like a big C. But in these alloys, it has a weird shape. It dips, then slows down massively, then speeds up again. Looks like a little bay or a cove.
Right. And the special drag supporter said, aha, this bay proves our point. The bottom of the bay is where the special drag is strongest.
It seems like a slam dunk for them. Look, right here is where it slows down.
But Padeshia offers a much more elegant and, frankly, more radical explanation. He argues that the bay isn't about drag at all. It's about a fundamental change in the mechanism of how the steel transforms.
A change in mechanism, like changing gears.
Even more drastic, like changing engines. Yeah. Above the bay, you have diffusional growth atoms just jumping around randomly. But below the bay, you start getting into a structure called bainite.
A bainite is different?
It forms differently. It has a shear component. It's a displacive mechanism, a coordinated military-style movement of atoms shifting all in unison.
So the interface changes its personality completely.
Yes. Padeshia argues that trying to apply a salute drag logic across this boundary, where the physics of movement changes from random jumping to coordinated shearing, is just not justified.
So the bay is just the awkward middle ground where the metal is deciding which set of rules to follow.
Exactly. The slowdown is the transition zone between two different ways the crystal rearranges itself. It's not a friction peak. It's a mechanism shift.
So bringing this all together, we started with scientists inventing a new force special salute drag to explain a discrepancy. Padeshia systematically proves that this force violates thermodynamics, it contradicts its own logic, and it ignores the reality of carbides and crystal ledges.
It's really a reminder that Occam's razor applies to metallurgy too. We shouldn't invent complex new things like special salute drag until we've exhausted the standard physics.
So what does this all mean for us today? Why should we care about a dispute from 1983?
Well, if we connect this to the bigger picture, it's about the integrity of our models. We use these models to design steel for skyscrapers, cars, nuclear reactors.
Right. We need to know how the steel is going to behave before we build the reactor.
Exactly. If we modeled the behavior using fudge factors, like special salute drag, we might get the right answer for that one alloy in that one temperature range. We've basically just kerr-fitted the data.
But if we try to apply that same model to a new high-performance steel that we haven't tested yet,
the model will fail because it's not based on the real physics. It's based on a ghost story we invented to make the math work. Padeshia's paper is a plea for scientific rigor. He's saying, don't invent a new force just because your calculation didn't match the experiment. Look closer at the experiment.
And he ends the paper looking to the future, doesn't he?
He does. He admits that, you know, back in 1983, our tools were limited. He calls for very high-resolution analytical techniques.
He was waiting for better microscopes.
He knew that eventually we'd be able to actually see the atoms at the interface. He was essentially saying, I can't prove I'm right with a picture yet, but I can prove you're wrong with math.
It's a humble flex.
And history has largely sided with him. As our atomic probe tomography has improved, these special drag theories have pretty much faded away. We can now see the segregation, we can see the carbides, we can see the ledges.
It really changes how you view a scientific fact.
Yeah.
It's not always a stone tablet. Sometimes it's just the best placeholder we have until someone with better math or a better microscope comes along.
That's the nature of the beast. Theories are there to be challenged. If Padeshia hadn't written this critique, we might still be using flawed models today.
I want to leave you with a thought today. Padeshia dismantled a popular theory by asking a simple question. Do the atoms actually want to be where the scientists said they were? He checked the motivation. It makes me wonder, how many other established scientific theories from the past are just placeholders, waiting for a microscope powerful enough to prove them wrong?
That is the question that keeps science moving forward.
Thanks for diving deep with us. We'll see you next time.